themselves.
Heroes Asylum.
Uno, morons.
Welcome everybody to Heroes Asylum number 150. Thought we'd never get here.
Ate it, man. Like it took a while. But hey, it's all about the journey, as my esteemed co-host would say. It's all about the journey.
Exactly. And we want to wish everybody a happy Easter, happy 420, depending on which religion you choose. 420 or the bunny rabbit, it's your call. Yeah,
some do one, some do the other, some do both. So it's quite all right. So I echo the sentiment, sir. Happy Easter, happy 420, and light them up if you got it.
Exactly. So how was your week, man? Anything fun? Did you do anything? Did you go to, weren't you going to go see a movie this weekend? Weren't you, Sinner? Or?
Yeah, I didn't put it as a post that I watched it, but I did see Sinners.
How was it?
It's really good. It's really good. It's not one of these message movies. I think it's one of the big things people have complained about. Like, oh, it's a message movie. It is, but it doesn't hit you over the head with it. Yeah. And I like when movies do that. It's a period piece, which I didn't think I wouldn't like. And it has a lot to do with a certain guitarist. I'm sure you could figure it out. So, and I'll leave it at that. It's Robert, a famous
guitarist. Robert Johnson?
Yes.
Okay. It's got to be that.
They include something with Robert Johnson in the movie that makes so much sense that I would think, like, if I were thinking of, like, you know, with the history of Robert Johnson saying that he made a deal with the devil, I would think this is the way he did it.
Gotcha.
That's the way I would put it. But it's a really good movie. Check it out, Sinners. Like, it's like 98% on Rotten Tomatoes or something, but it is that good.
Yeah. So, I love the fact when you say it's got a message, but it does. But anytime ever anybody says that to me, first thing I think of is, are you going to be a menace in South Central by drinking your juice in the hood? Keenan and Ivory Wayne's always popping in. Message.
The message. Good pull.
Oh, man, I used to love that movie. Speaking of 420, we used to get stoned and watch that movie all the time. That one, and do you remember The Stoned Age?
No, I don't remember Stoned Age.
Okay, that was another one of our movies.
See, mine was Hot Shots Part Deux.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That was the 420 one that we always did. We always quote that because it's so ridiculous. I mean, the movies back then all were, but that one has a special place in my heart. So,
folks, what we are doing, obviously, April, we've been, you know, hitting the horror genre pretty heavy. So this week we decided, like we've already covered our favorite kind of horror-based series, our favorite horror-based characters. This week we're talking about horror movies, which really was kind of tough because – you get some that are sort of horror, but aren't. They're kind of like these weird ones. Like, I looked at a list, like, I think the top 200.
I think I saw the same list.
And I'm just, like, looking through it. I'm like, is that really, like, what was it? Freaky was on there, which, I mean, it's kind of more, like,
psychological.
It's like, I don't know, man. And I sort of used the list as something, like, I literally went through and basically did the whole if I was on a desert island type. Mm-hmm. Scenario.
My scenario was also like kind of similar, but I didn't want to include anything. Like, I think we had a conversation last time about, you know, the characters that we chose, and you kind of put something in my head. It was like, yeah, you know, you chose that from that series, so now don't choose that movie, choose something else.
Exactly, that's what I did. Yeah,
and that's what made me kind of think and go over. Yeah. And like, oh, now let me go a little bit deeper. And once you said that, then it clicked, and I looked at that same list and I was like, would I choose that? But then it gave me ideas to do other films. So that list did help me a little bit.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah. So basically, if we've talked about a character that was in a movie, or if we've talked about, well, no, pretty good, because that was the only one we did for movies so far. So yeah, if we talked last week about the character that was in a movie, yeah, it is not in my list at all. Yeah. And that, which was tough.
Yeah. You weren't the only one, but yeah, so I had to dig a little bit deep. Then I discovered that I actually have a decent eclectic version of horror movies. So. Sir, why don't you start us off?
All right. Well, I'm going to go with one I'm not shy about. We've done it before. We actually did it on the BAM podcast during our Year of Fear. Was Trick or Treat. Not Trick or Treat, but Trick or Treat. It's a 2007 American anthology horror written by Michael Dougherty. And it was also his directorial debut. But it was produced by Bryan Singer. And when you see the cast, you're kind of like, oh, that kind of makes sense, because you had Dylan Baker, you had Rochelle Adis, you had Anna Paquin, you had Brian Cox, some actors that were in the X-Men movies as well.
Quite a bit, a little X-Men vibes in there.
But it basically is an anthology series, and Jeff and I are big anthology fans when it comes to horror movies. And this one for me, because it was probably the newest and freshest when it came out, because I remember going to the theaters. I've gone back when Fandom, like, we'll do a re-release and it goes back in the theaters. I'll go and watch it in the theaters again. I absolutely love it. But it follows a small town during Halloween and following the rules of Halloween. And if you don't follow the rules, you'll be visited by Sam. And I think what I loved about this anthology series, like others in the past, they're standalone stories. When you first watch through this movie, you see that they can be standalone stories, but you see a thread going on. Not just Sam, but you see somebody from a story earlier that just happens to walk by in the third story. And I thought that was really cool that they're blending this, telling you, yes, this is a small town. Everybody's seeing everybody else. But yeah, it's just so much fun. And I absolutely loved Brian Cox in this, because he was like he's the anti-Halloween, and it's just perfect.
I remember when you suggested this movie, because I think when we did the BAM watch along, that was my first time watching. I don't think we mentioned that. And when you told me it was an anthology, I was like, okay, you piqued my interest. And then, like you said, the story that weaves through the whole way through, like the stuff with the girls, the stuff with, I mean, the kids in the school bus, that was freaking freaky. All right. That was freaky as hell. And Brian Cox just got Anna Paquin, you think she's one thing, but she's not. I kind of like that. And like you said, the way it just wove in there. I mean, the special effects are really good. That creepy little doll,
that's the character. Yeah,
looks creepy as hell. You wouldn't think like a little kid wearing just like a simple mask would be creepy. It is. And the way they used him in the movie was creepy. I mean, like, yeah, it's so good if you have not checked that out. I guess the only question I would say is, like, how come they haven't made a sequel?
Yeah,
like, we talk about sequels all the time. Make a sequel to that.
I think because it didn't get the money, like, when it came out. Because, again, it was one of those sleeper hits. It came out, everybody's like, okay. And it started picking up its sort of cult following when it hit DVD, and streaming is where I think it – and so – and you've seen that in so many movies where, like, you know what, it did this, but we never got a sequel because it didn't make money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's, you know, I would wish beyond wish that they would try to do another one. But again, it's been, you know, we're talking 2007, although they do a lot of lately, they have been doing sequels, you know, 2 decades later. So,
yeah, which is, man, I hope that's not a new trend. That's just, it just is so weird. Like, sequels are like what, in between like 2, 3, 4 years, maybe, if that.
Usually, yeah. Because you don't, you know, the public interest kind of wanes on it, so you don't want to. But some of those sequels have been working, though. That's what's really surprising is, like, some of those ones coming out, you're like.
Not all, but some of them have worked out.
I mean, we got this summer, the new Karate Kid. So, I mean, and that's.
Good, which looks, dude, I was not looking forward to it. I was like, this is going to be stupid. Then I saw it, the trailer, I was like, oh, shit, I want to see this.
I think my only thing, and I haven't read it anywhere, is this connected with Cobra Kai, or is this like they're a multiverse, Cobra Kai didn't happen, and this is
no. From what I read from Machio, he said like this movie takes place 5 years after Cobra Kai.
Oh, okay, that's good to know. So, we can recognize that. And...
Yeah, so they're gonna do like a time jump. So.
Nice. Okay. So what do you got for your first one?
I got a Poland film. It's a Poland horror movie, and I'd never really seen it. I usually go through TikTok sometimes at night because I get really bored. And there's this guy called Chuck. I'm not sure if you heard of him, Mike. He's a TikToker. Chuck does a lot of like horror movie reviews, and he got me like, oh, shit, that's a great movie. And all his movies are, like he would say, bangers, and they're really good. And one of the ones I found was called Hellhole. I think I told you about this movie. Basically, the premise is this guy, he's like a news reporter. And he's going to go to this basically a monastery. And this monastery has this group of monks. And these group of monks are taking care of patients who happen to have possession. Demon possession, apparently. Or so they say it's demon possession. So this guy goes in there to investigate, see if it's real or bullshit. And then he discovers while he's in the monastery, he can't get out. All right? There's no way out. He goes deeper and deeper into this monastery. There's more secrets. The monks are not who they seem. And this guy, the investigator, is involved in all this, and he doesn't really even know it. It's a slow build. I am not going to lie. It is slow. But the last 20 minutes of the movie, all worth it. And anything that has to do with horror and religion, as I've talked to Mike a thousand times, I love movies that kind of mix that. You know, I'm a Supernatural fan, obviously. So it kind of rubbed off in like films, and anything that has like a religious element to it, it makes it even freakier. And as I said, the last 20 minutes of that movie make it all worth it. And I found it, I think, on Shudder. So check it out, Jones.
Yeah, there have been some pretty good ones on like the Shudder, or if anybody has a Roku, they've got like, I think, three horror channels. And like, I watched one the other day that was just, it was, I think it was Russian, because like the words weren't matching up, but it was basically this group of kids go to visit like a place where there was a group of people vanished like 20 years ago, and they get locked into wherever it is, and there's something there, and just the whole twist of what it is and what's causing it, doing this, was just so great. I'm like, man, there are some really good low budget. I don't even call them low budget, because it's not about quality. It's just about what they spent to make it. You can still find some really good, budget ones out there. Good special effects, because you could get away with tons of shit on your computer nowadays.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, some of them you're going to see, it's obvious, but like most of the ones are kind of mixed, the practical and the special, which are the best ones, more practical for me. But yeah, I agree. I mean, so many good films on there that you've never even heard of. Go down a rabbit hole for usually on Halloween, I'll go straight to Shudder now.
Yeah.
Like, I still have my OG movies that I go to, obviously, every year, and so do you. But for Halloween, I used to do AMC. Forget it. I just go to Shudder now. Straight to Shudder, and they always have like a theme for the month. Like Halloween, will have these different Halloween movies on there. So, what you got there, sir?
Oh, let me see here. I don't have them in any particular order. So
neither do I.
I did sort of like 2000s. So let me go older, and I'm gonna kind of try to flip them around. I don't know if you have this one. This one you might have, but the original Alien movie, 1979.
I don't have that one. I have the next.
You got the see that? Yeah, I thought about it, because to me that one's more sci-fi military.
Yeah,
more than horror. This is straight up. This is horror. I mean, just if you guys get a chance, there's a bunch of like documentaries on how they made Alien, and it's just the backstory and everything they went through, talking with Geiger, and just how, what kind of like his mindset and how involved he really was in the movie. I thought when I first like watched it and I had seen his artwork, I was like, oh, they just used him as sort of like, a source material for like the design, kind of like they did with Ralph McQuarrie for Star Wars. I'm thinking they just, he made stuff and they're like, oh, we like that. We're going to kind of make that. No, he really was involved in the movie. But I mean, if anybody's never seen Alien, do yourself a favor. I know some folks out there, because if it's before 2000, they don't want it, but
it doesn't count. No, it's too old. Like, no, man. No, there's some movies that just can stand the test of time.
And Alien is one of them, even though the quality is bad. But I mean, just the overall of it. I mean, it's a Ridley Scott movie, not his first, but it's, and just the cast alone, Tom Skerritt, Sigourney Weaver, Veronica Cartwright. I mean, just Harry Dean Stanton, John Hurt. I mean, you're looking at like everybody like that went on to do more things.
Yeah, bigger things, very, very big things. And I think to get back onto Giger, not only designed the alien, he also designed like the interior of the ship.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Remember, he was like, so involved. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know if you mentioned that. I just want to make sure. But like, he did that, and that added to the creepiness of the film. Besides the alien, like, it wasn't only the alien; it was that too. Like the way they used the shots in that movie, like the dripping water. I mean, even like when they shot the cat, mm-hmm. he was like the main part of that movie. Freaking wild. But yeah, like I was thinking about Alien, but I don't know, for me Aliens is a little bit more.
I looked at movies I rewatch all the time. Like so far the two I've named are rewatchable ones that I could literally watch every other week or so. So when I'm doing this, may not be like the top scariest thing I've ever seen, but it's something that's in my wheelhouse, and it's like, again, the top 10 of an island kind of thing was what I went with. Which kind of movies are I'm gonna rewatch over and over again? And this Alien, hands down, even though it is it's like you were saying with Hellhole, it was how it was slow burn. This Alien is a slow burn because it starts real slow, and like it's very Jaws-esque with the fact that you don't see the creature, you really don't get a great look at him until much, much further into the movie. And again, just the build up, the suspense and everything. And It's great, just great movie.
I would concur, sir. I would concur as well. I guess my go, since we're going to go back, I'm going to go back further than you. I'm talking way back. I'm talking about films that nobody would watch today except probably me and you. And it's a movie that's actually heavily influenced by one of my favorite artists, Rob Zombie, and that's Freaks from 1932.
Nice.
I thought this movie was bullcrap because I looked in these lists and I never saw this movie. I was like, that was the thing. Like, oh, this can't be scary. It's in 1932. How scary can it be? Oh, yeah, it gets scary. If you've never seen, the premise is pretty simple. Freaks is about these circus performers, and obviously they're freaks, the beard lady, the one-headed like kid, and like just anything crazy circusy you can think of it is involved in a circus. And basically there's this woman, and she comes involved with one of the performers who happened to be a short person, like a dwarf, a midget. And basically she was with him because he I guess he had money. And if he married him and get him killed, blah, 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 like she would inherit all the millions. That's all. It's a basic premise. But throughout the film, like you see these circus performers. And again, slow burn. Nothing really happens for a while until the last 15 minutes. And what happens to the woman at the end is even freakier. Again, it's an old school movie. I know some of you don't want to watch it because it's black and white, but do yourself a favor, and it's not long. It's like, I think an hour, maybe less.
Yeah, I was to say, I think with
might have been an hour 12, not sure, but I know it wasn't that long. So it gets to the point pretty quick, but it, like I said, it's the build up again, getting to know these characters, and then that switch at the end when you find out, like, oh yeah, they're like giggly, 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 but the switch is flipped and they turn straight into these horror creatures. And it's just frightening, especially the ending when you see them walking, like kind of crawling through the rain and the mud. Ugh.
Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. I think probably one of my favorite X-File episodes was actually kind of like copied off of this. Remember the one with Humbug?
Yes. Oh, wow.
I had heard of Freaks. But I, you know, obviously I'd seen the X-Files episode more, and that kind of like stuck with me. Then when I finally saw Freaks, I was like, okay, here's a sort of a correlation. If you guys, anybody's interested, you can, there's no place to stream it, but you can purchase it on Amazon or YouTube or Google or any of those short type streaming services where you can purchase it. But yeah, 1932, an hour and 4 minutes long, by the way, you were right there.
I was right there. See, I knew it. I was right there. I was close because I was thinking, like, I'm not a film historian, but I know, like, films back then, they couldn't go no further than a certain length.
I think the most, like, I mean, other than, like, The Gone with the Wind or you know, like, Citizen Kane, like those monster ones, yeah, but usually you're, like, hour and a half.
Yeah, The Gone with the Wind was, like, the first one that, like, pushed it to, like, it was, like, 3 hours.
I think it was one of the first ones that actually had, like, an intermission, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, yes, it did.
All right, so mine is, and I kind of go back to, and I sort of mentioned it last week, but if anybody follows along, they'll know I'm a big vampire fan, but Byzantium. I don't know if anybody's ever seen Byzantium before. It's 2012. It's kind of a gothic drama horror, but it's about these two female vampires who have been around for like 200 years, and it's them kind of going back to the town where they were made. And interned. It's a twist on it. Now, what's really interesting, and most folks probably don't realize it, the director of this, Neil Jordan, is actually the one who directed the movie Interview with a Vampire. This is his return to the vampire movies.
Oh, okay. 20
something years later. Yeah, this was his return. But yeah, it's, I mean, if anybody's gets a chance to take a look at it, it's really good. We started in recent times, we got this one, which was actually based off of a play. It's not based off of a book, because I was like, man, I want to see this like in a book. And what it was I think a vampire love story or something like that. I can't remember the exact title, but it was this guy that made it as a play for his college, and they converted it into this gorgeous, I mean, absolutely gorgeous movie. But like I was saying, around that time, there was this genre of sympathetic, and when I say sympathetic, I don't mean romantic vampires, but more sympathetic ones. You had this one. You also had Let the Right One In, I don't know if you remember that one.
Oh, both versions, yes.
Yeah, both versions, yeah.
And the American one.
That one's based off of a book, but you were getting these sort of like sympathetic, not these flashy romantic types, but real life kind of vampires that were just like, I just do this. I do this to survive. And I thought that was an interesting trend that we sort of got a little bit. And I think because it wasn't so flashy and romantic, it wasn't Twilight, it wasn't Interview, you know, we didn't have that poster boy going in there, you know. So I don't think it was picked up.
Oh, that's too bad. And I've never heard of this series. So you just told me right now. It's the first.
Really? I thought you said you had heard of it last week.
Not this one.
Okay, yeah, it's basically it's two girls, an older woman and a younger girl, and this whole man that they were living with, he's basically dying. He knows what they are, and the girl kills him and, you know, lets him die off, and then they have to run back to this town that they grew up in 200 years later and start seeing things and, like, remembering, and, like, their past starts kind of coming back to them in flashbacks. So you're getting them now, and then you're getting them beforehand. And it's a really cool book, or cool movie. Definitely check it out. Very, very gothic in the imagery as far as, like, how it was filmed. You know, you get those a lot of, like, neutral tones in the cinematography. Yeah, it's really, really good movie.
I'm going to definitely put that one on the list. And because, like I said, I don't remember this one. A couple other ones you said I do, but, like, that one, And it's from the guy who made Interview with the Vampire, which I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, which I didn't realize at the time. Is like I remember this being a play, and I had to like do a little digging, do some research. And when that popped up, I was like, oh, that's a cool little trivia thing that he did Interview, and then I'm not doing another vampire movie for 20 years, and then he comes back to something much darker.
I'll definitely have to check that one out. So basically, my film is going to be, it's been an animated series on Netflix. It's also been a live action series on Netflix. Had many, many, many movies, including a reboot. It is originally a video game. And that is Resident Evil. But the Mila Jovovich one, not Welcome to Raccoon City, which is okay. It was kind of more on that horror vibe. This is more of the horror and the action. I would say it's kind of like the reverse. Welcome to Raccoon City is like the Alien. And Resident Evil, Mila Jovovich is like the Aliens.
See,
that's the best.
Mila's the only one I've ever seen. I don't think I've ever seen any of the other ones. Just the ones that she's been in, and I thought that was it for.
There's been more, dude. Yeah, the animated series they had on Netflix, good. The live action one with Lance Riddick is on there. It takes place. Yeah, I mean, and the movies are fun. Like, but this one, the first one, it added that element of horror and action. And you got one of the best female protagonists out there in like the Alice character, so that which was birthed by this film.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you're a fan of Alice in Wonderland, that is basically the character she's playing, because in this world, this is Alice descending in to the world of Wonderland, but it's just not the Wonderland you're thinking of. It's a horror Wonderland.
Yeah, it's a great allegory for Alice in Wonderland.
That's really what it is. I mean, that's what they said. Like the director, I think, is married to Mila Jovovich, and that's what. When he was writing the movie, yeah, of course, why not? It's Mila Jovovich. So as he was doing the movie, you know, he didn't want to do a straight adaptation of the game. Obviously, he added a lot of stuff of the game, you know, the Umbrella Corporation, like the evil pharmaceutical company, which, you know, that is kind of a ridiculous notion if you think about it. Like, a pharmaceutical company so evil? That would never happen.
That's a stretch. Shut up. So I was never a fan of the games. And when I say that, I'm saying I wasn't a fan of the games because it never piqued my interest, so I never played them. It's not that I hated them, just wasn't a fan because I never got a chance to like play them myself. So when I was sort of one of those fresh eyes when it came to the movie. And the internet was around, but I don't remember a lot of backlash from the gaming community about that movie, or was there? I mean,
There is, from like the hardcore people, they're like, oh, it's not the real game, because in the video game, the Jill Valentine character is basically the Alice character.
Oh, okay.
Like she's basically the lead Jill, and she's got a brother, and there's Chris, and some other stuff happens later on, which they include in these movies too, but they do, like they say, they do it, they kind of their own way. But that was the only backlash. But other than that, people took these movies for what they were, which was freaking fun. And like I said, this, the first one is truly the horror one. The second one, And they go, once they get outside of containment, to me, it's that's where it became like wacky.
Gotcha.
Because like then there's zombies underwater. I mean, there's zombies that can fly. There's creatures. There's flying snakes. There is a freaking Pyramid Head appearance in this movie too, which I was like, really? They're gonna put Pyramid Head in this movie? Like, and he's based off the Silent Hill games. He's like their main protagonist. He's a giant guy with a head and the axe and all that. But they
they went the route of Tremors. They start off with the big creature, then went to the ass ones, and then to the flying ones. Yeah. Okay.
It's flying as they go back on the ground. It gets wackier after that. I will admit that, but it does not take away from the first film. It does have a lot of the horror elements and music, as me and Jones have talked about many, many times before. Music is basically a character in this movie, and it is, especially the score by Manson.
That one definitely sticks out because it was one of those ones where I'm like, you know, I watched the movie, I enjoyed it, but like the soundtrack to me stood out so much better, and not just like in the movie, but like the album itself. I remember like a lot of people just having that.
I mean, the soundtrack was so good. They had a Depeche Mode song on there. They did a cover song of a 70s song they were doing on there. So how could I not love it?
Exactly.
All right, sir, what you got next?
My next one is, and this is probably one of my most favorite series of movies, franchises go. The universe is amazing. I'm not a fan of who it's written about because it is written about real-life people. I feel like what they were wasn't that great, you know, kind of what they did. But I love the movies. I love the actors that are in it. But The Conjuring. Watch The Conjuring over and over again, and the rest of the series as well. I mean, when you go through the franchise of Conjuring, but you also hit like The Nun and Abigail and just some of the best ones out there. But yeah, that one just really sticks with me. And again, like I said, I can just, if it's on or I just want to watch something, I hop on there. James Wan was the director of it. He is also the co-creator for Saw and the Insidious franchises as well. So he had an understanding for franchises, but they went a different route with The Conjuring. They based it loosely off of the, what were their names? The Warrens.
The Warrens, yes.
Yeah, Ed and Lorraine Warren. And again, like I said, I've seen so many documents and documentations about them. I'm not a fan of them, but the story and... And this is also loosely based off of the Amityville Horrors. So it's kind of if anybody's ever seen Amityville Horrors, you'll notice like some of the similarities with this movie and that. But I just absolutely love it. You got Patrick Wilson, who I think does amazing job in anything I've ever seen him in. I've always been happy with him.
And, yeah, he's always good in everything. Yeah. I agree with that. Like, shit, I was just thinking about the movies, man. Sorry, but go on.
Oh, yeah, but like I was saying, yeah, just... It's one of my favorite ones. Like I said, the whole franchise alone is one of the ones I could just rewatch. But yeah, The Conjuring definitely is up there.
I love the fact that those Conjuring movies kind of built their own kind of universe within the Conjuring world, which is kind of crazy. What I thought, like, you had like the Case Files, obviously, but the characters, like you said, The Nun. I think The Crooked Man came out of this series. He's another creepy one. And Annabelle, The Doll. So you had like three creepy characters coming out of one film franchise.
Sorry, which is like, I think I said Abigail. I was thinking of the vampire Abigail. Sorry,
which is another good one.
that was one of my maybes on my list, and I think that's why it stuck in my head.
that didn't make mine, but I was thinking about Abigail because I was like, yeah, I like it. Excellent choice there, sir.
So what do you got next?
I got a fun one, man. Because if you know me, I like horror, but I like kind of fun horror movies too. And I'm not gonna beat around the bush. It's Shaun of the Dead. I mean, I love Shaun of the Dead. I mean, Nick Frost, Simon Pegg, those guys go on to make the Cornetto trilogy, which is freaking awesome. You know, At the World's End, Hot Fuzz, all those films, fun. But this kind of took horror, kind of add a little bit of humor to it. I always call my bar the Winchester. And I got it from this movie because that's how they always met in the entire film. Like, you know, the world's going to freaking blow up. So what am I going to do? Got to go to the pike and go to the Winchester. That was kind of like the running theme throughout the entire film. And that's basically the premise. There's this apocalypse going on. It starts off slow. They got to find their parents. He's going through a relationship issues with his girlfriend. And his mom is going out with a guy that he doesn't approve of. And it's a zombie apocalypse and shenanigans ensued. And it all kind of like transcends. They have to get to the Winchester bar. And there's stuff that happens in there. But like just truly like a really fun, comedic zombie movie. And sometimes you got to clean the palate, you know, because Resident Evil is kind of wacky. This one's more a horror comedy. But like I said, still along that, it's still terrifying. Like, the zombies are still scary. Like, there are moments where you see gore stuff.
Well, yeah, it was like Zombieland. I mean, it was fun. And you're like, man, that's a fucking scary zombie, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Like, when they're ripping apart his friend, like, through the window, that's horrifying.
Yeah, when he does Kill of the Week with the pickaxe. I mean, just there were a few. Yeah, you had Shaun of the Dead, you had Zombieland, and there was another one that was like a horror comedy. I know we watched and it wasn't part of this.
What year was Warm Bodies? No, Warm Bodies is before this.
Yeah, well, like I was getting ready to say, like Bubba Hotep. I mean, that's just. I mean, that's just horror comedy just wrapped into good old Bruce Campbell nugget there.
That would be so good. I mean, just that alone.
Just the title.
Just the Bubba Hotep, and then he plays the real Elvis, which I love. Yeah. Like, he's not the person; he's the real Elvis, and he goes, "If you haven't seen Bubba Hotep, do yourself a favor, watch it."
Yeah, please do. Please do.
Fun.
It is a cult classic, and he names his growth on his penis Priscilla.
Priscilla.
I am going to go with a sort of period time piece, and it falls under folk horror. So not suspenseful, not gothic, but it's a folk horror movie. Came out in 2015, and it introduced the world into her first feature. I'm sure she was around before that, but first feature film for Anna Taylor-Joy. The Witch. Have you ever seen The Witch?
No, I've heard that's a Robert Edgar's film. I know that. I watched The Norseman or The Horseman. Yeah, The Norseman. He did that, and then he did another movie which I watched, but I've never seen The Witch.
You really need to see The Witch. Yeah, set in the 1630s, New England, and the narrative kind of follows a Puritan family who are preyed upon by some evil force in the woods beyond their, just outside of there, and it's just like there's fear, desperation. It's just there's so much going on. They don't want to be in the town because they feel the town is too risque. It doesn't really follow the teaching of the Puritans, so they're like, well, we're gonna go out away from the town, really far. So like, if there's like a day trip to get to the nearest town, so they're very isolated. And it's mother of father, Anna, who's the oldest daughter. I think she's like in her like late teens maybe, and then she has two other siblings, younger siblings, and just things start happening around the farm. Animals start turning up, animals start disappearing, and just it falls into that supernatural side of it where they start thinking that there's a witch in the woods, and just the turn at the end is just amazing. And again, another film shot beautifully. It's shot with a little bit more graininess because of it's being outside, and you're not getting a lot of bright time, you know, a lot of like bright lights and everything like that. And again, we were talking about like not making money. This thing cost $4 million. It freaking banked $40 million. No need for a sequel because of where it ended. But I thought it was done beautifully. And yeah, if you haven't gotten a chance, you got to check that movie out.
No, because I like the director. He did Nosferatu, which did you watch Nosferatu yet?
Yes.
I think we discussed. Yeah, and which I like the way it shot. I just didn't like the way it ended. But that's kind of my choice. Like, it's a little something a little weird. But like, I've heard about this film many times.
Yeah, really good.
Definitely. Because I've watched every one of his other movies, including The Lighthouse, which is really weird. But
that's one I've got. I haven't watched it yet. It's like I kind of want to watch it.
I don't know. Look, I would not blame you if you didn't want to watch it. It is really weird.
Yeah.
It's like it's weird for me, and so you have to know that's weird because I like weird shit. But that's a little like what? We have to draw the line. But yeah, I'll definitely have to check The Witch out because Robert Edgar's, man. I guess I'll go. This movie came out, I think, 2 years ago, and it's a relatively newer one on the list. I think we discussed it a couple times. I think we sent each other TikToks on it, actually. And, you know, did you watch it yet? How did you watch it? Late Night with the Devil with David Smolchin.
Yes.
Freaking love this movie. It's basically shot as a sort of a reality show in the 70s. If you watch any of these shows in the 70s, basically this is what it was. They were bringing like complete strangers, like, hey, you can like juggle 80 balls at a time. Yay. So basically it's this talk show host. He's basically hosting these midnight talk shows, because back then in the 70s, when me and Jones were kids, they had these late night talk shows that started at midnight and they were live. And then they were like a public access channel. Like I said, probably you weren't even born yet. But they would have that, and the format is exactly like this. And they would have like similar acts like this. Only thing is, they bring on this certain couple, not a couple, actually it's a psychologist and a little girl. And basically she's saying, like, I'm going to show you on live TV a live demon possession. From there, you got to judge if it's real, if it's not real, the way it ends. But the buildup to it, and the way it's shot, to me, make it creepy. And the ending, like I said, because I think a lot of the endings in these films have like the what the fuck moment.
Yeah, exactly.
This is one of them.
Yeah.
And I freaking love it. And like I said, it's not a huge budget neither. I think it was barely shot for anything. But they released it straight to streaming. It's a banger.
Was it straight to streaming? I thought it went out to the theaters.
I don't remember going to the theaters. It was like probably like a limited run. But
yeah,
I love this movie. I'm going to watch it again on Halloween. Shit, I'll probably watch it tonight. But it's that good. If you want to get, like, spooked, it's...
Yeah, it's really...
I wouldn't
say there's
more, but it's just... It's
Oh, it was going to be on my list. It was throughout the week. I was like, oh, I got to remember to put that one on my list. And I didn't get to my list in time. But, yeah, that one definitely is one you can just watch again. And you know what really throws me, or what it really got to me? It reminded me of The Dark Knight. Like the Dark Knight Returns, and how the Joker had his...
Oh, yeah, like the talk show host. That's right. Like Indrik, I think it's called Jim Indrik or something like that. He's a talk show host.
Yeah, and because that reminded me of that. And then, of course, in the Joker movie, they kind of redid that same scene in a way. And that, as I was watching that, I was like, oh, this is sort of paying homage to it, as well as paying homage to the old late night shows.
Which you and I both know a lot about. So, I mean, some people were still asleep, but like I was always up late and I always watched their shows. And my dad, he worked third shift, so he wasn't going to come home till like 7 o'clock in the morning. So me and my brother, we used to watch those shows. Like, what is this about? Totally dumb and stupid. But still, it's like the whole thing about being up after midnight. Ooh, it's so taboo. That's what the movie kind of illustrates too. Cause it's like, it goes into psychosis almost. You're watching this. Let's say you're watching on live TV, right? All this is really happening. And like 2-3:30 is coming, you're falling asleep, and then all of a sudden that happens and you're watching it. It's more horror.
All right, so I got one more.
One more.
One more. And I'm going old school for us. Classic. And it's one I can rewatch. I've seen, they've done many series of it. They've done sequels recently. Again, this is one of those movies where like a sequel comes out, you know, 20 years later. Actually, in this case, I think 30 years later. But The Shining, 1980, with Stanley Kubrick. I mean, if nobody's ever seen any Stanley Kubrick films, you got to do yourself a favor. But
watch it.
But yeah, it's a Stephen King novel, but this is not a true translation of it. In fact, King does not even acknowledge that movie. He basically signed off and said, "Yeah, no, that's not mine," because it was actually rewritten or co-written with Stanley by Diane Johnson, who sort of is a novelist herself. But again, you've got Jack Nicholson in here, you got Shelley Duvall, you got Danny Lloyd and Scott Mancuso. It's a five person cast, except for the background characters. Yeah, it is a very small cast, and it just takes place in this hotel during the wintertime at Jack's. The caretaker of it. And have you seen the series? There was a series called of The Shining.
Talking about the limited series that came on, like, it was ABC. I did see it. I guess they said that adaptation was more true to the book.
Yes.
That's what I heard that series was.
Yeah, it was.
I did watch it. That's what Steven Weber, by the way, from Wings.
Yes, he thank you. Yeah, I couldn't remember his name. I was like, it's from Wings, but I didn't want to say
it. I know that's what you're thinking. You're kind of looking at him. Who was it? No,
because I actually watched it 2 weeks ago. It was on one of those horror streaming ones. I was like, oh crap, I haven't seen this in a while.
yeah, obviously that series was pretty good, but like this movie is a classic. Yeah. I mean, if you didn't have this on the list, I would be shocked because you're a big King guy. I was like wondering when The Shining was going to come, to be honest.
And then you had the sequel that came out just a few years ago, Dr. Sleep.
Which was really good, too.
Yep, with Ewan McGregor, Mr. Obi-Wan himself.
Yeah, Rebecca Ferguson's in there. She plays like the it's also good. And Obi-Wan is playing basically the kid character who came back, which I found kind of cool. So, oh, okay, so they're tying it into The Shining. That's cool.
Well, the Shining was the power that the kid had, his abilities. So that's what when he gets older, he still has the Shining. So that, but like I said, I don't think it really explains it too heavy in the movie. The series does.
No, the series goes into it a lot.
Really,
and it gets
in depth, yeah.
It's a little more in depth, which I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I guess it's one of those moments we've talked about. Like, I didn't really need to know about The Shining. I kind of like it as an entity. Like, oh, I don't know how he got it. It's just there.
Well, I know, like I said, I know King like really appreciated the series more because he actually like did a cameo in it. Because he always does that. He'll like any of his movies, he'll usually do like a little cameo, walk on, play a preacher. I think he was the priest in like Pet Sematary. Like he was the driver in, I think, the Twilight Zone.
Maximum Overdrive. He was the gas station attendant,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah, I think one of the Twilight Zone ones was it Twilight Zone? Where he played the farmer who discovered the asteroid.
Oh, that's Creepshow. Creepshow.
Okay, yeah. So I mean, he was in that too. But yeah, when I was watching it, he actually plays the conductor of the band at the ghost party.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So just the fact that I think it went more in depth into the book. It is. The movie and the book are nowhere alike at all.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Like, because he's bastardized his film many times. Oh, yeah, I don't even acknowledge it. But like as a whole, it's a really good movie. Like you said, it's creepy because, again, enclosed. We're in that confined space and you're surrounded by snow and it's a limited amount of people. And there's this dude who's like slowly breaking down and going insane. And like when he finally snaps, he snaps.
Well, it's got some of the most iconic like scenes.
Visionary, like the scenes with the little girls like down the hall.
The girls, like, the blood out of the elevator. Jack Nicholson knocking, breaking in the door. Johnny's, here's Johnny. Just some of the most classic, like iconic scenes happen in this movie.
I think the scariest part is not even the one when he breaks the axe through the door. It's actually when he is chasing Shelley Duvall through the snow.
That was another scary one.
Yeah, like you see it like it's like an enclosed. It's going light but dark, and like she's running. And the music in the movie in the film also added. So yeah,
so good. It is referenced in Ready Player One, and I think they did a great job of paying homage to it. I mean, just the revisit of that snow maze, the revisit of the elevator. So for that he's like, oh, I found this elevator. Walk away, run, get away from the
away. I like that.
Yeah, movie. Yeah, really good one. So,
I'll have to rewatch that one.
So what do you have for your last one?
My last one and but least, I'm not sure if you have this on your list, but my brother and I, we swear by this movie. Like I think he recommended it to me first. And then I saw it. And this is from a director who's done a lot of good stuff. The first two Hellboy movies. He did about a series I talked about when we talked about TV series or horror movies, Cabin of Curiosities, which Mike needs to watch. And that is Pan's Labyrinth. Pan's Labyrinth is basically a very low budget. It's a subtitle like a French film that he did. But it's a horror movie. And it kind of intertwines a war that's going on at the time with this little girl. The visionary stuff that you see in this film, like the creature work, is frightening. Especially, you've seen, if you type into Pan's Labyrinth, you'll see this creature that is straight Del Toro, just sitting there with eyes, and then like a plate of food. And that scene alone is creepy. Not a lot of gore, but like imagery-wise, it's very unsettling. And like I said, there's little girls involved. The ending doesn't go the way you think it's going to go. There's a war going on. Pan's Labyrinth, if you have not seen it, like I said, it is subtitled, it's in French, but do yourself a favor and watch it. If you love Guillermo del Toro, you'll like this film.
Is it French or Spanish? I thought it was a Spanish movie.
Spanish. I'm sorry, what did I say? French.
Yeah, you say French. Because the first time I tried to sit down and watch, I was like, man, I really want to watch this, but I was kind of like wanting to, in the background, I'm like, ah, crap, I got to sit down and watch this.
Yeah, you got to like it, but it's good. It's good. It's definitely worth the watch. And if you like Del Toro, like I love Del Toro. I think you like Del Toro too. So, yeah, like, and it just, you can see his creature work, which I love his creature work, the way he does it. He mixes that practical and he mixes the CGI as well, but it looks seamless and creepy. Well,
during when we did the episode of television series, I was The Strain was one of my top ones.
Yeah.
And it's from him. Yeah. So yeah, yeah, that's you know, he's awesome. His comic book series, anything he's ever done in the comic book world, got to check it out. But yeah, that's Pan is visually amazing, because that's what drew me. Yeah, and again, another great actor who's done so much. Doug Jones was in there, you know, and Doug's been part of the horror genre, fantasy genre forever.
Yeah, I've been doing stuff. I think he was. What's the Del Toro movie that won an Oscar? Was it Lady in the Lake or something?
The water one. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Yeah, I can see the poster, them intertwined underwater, but
yeah
it's like, I'm drawing a blank. But yeah, it's just amazing. Anything Del Toro. I don't think I've ever seen a bad Del Toro production, to think of it.
I can't think of any.
Yeah.
I really can. Like, that guy to me has hit home run after home run. Like, I want to see Hellboy 3. I'm never going to see it. I want to see him do Justice League Dark. We've always been screaming about like that. That's a match made in heaven right there.
Yeah, that would be,
Oh, that would be so good. All right. But I guess.
So we're going to be doing a movie watch along this week. So we'll get that released out to you. We are actually delving into a little strange trend that's been going on where I guess like the rights are getting rolled over or going off of some classic characters. And Jeff and I have sort of really jumped into the Twisted Childhood series. But a new movie which doesn't fall under that category is Popeye the Slayer Man. So we will be doing a watch along for Popeye the Slayer Man. I think you and I still need to sit down and just watch it together. is the Pan one. I haven't I've got it, haven't watched it yet, and that one just looks so twisted.
Yeah. I finished that one.
Did you finally finish? Okay.
Finally finished it. It's different. It ain't your daddy's Peter Pan.
Yeah,
the
Pooh verse is because you got the two Winnie the Pooh movies, you've got the Peter Pan one, and they've got a whole series coming out here shortly. I think they're gonna have I think they're like Avenger-esque movie is coming out soon. Monsters Villains Unite or something.
What are they gonna do with all that? Like they have another one coming. I think it's The Death of Snow White that's coming too.
Yep. Yeah, because I think the Evil Queen, there's a few ones that are in the Avengers-esque movie that they're gonna be brought in later. They're being introduced into that in that movie, and their movies will come later. Like I know there's a Bambi one coming out.
There's a Bambi one coming.
Which, I'm sorry, when I heard that, all I could think about was The Rock on Saturday Night Live. That's all I could think about. Was
Bambi.
It's like, oh my God.
He's going out shooting people, like getting vengeance for his mom. That's great.
Yeah.
He should play Bambi if he wasn't so busy.
All right, guys. Okay. So make sure you guys do check us out on Facebook. Thank you so much for listening and checking in with us online. So we'll go. See you next week. How about you, man?
We'll see you next week. I am going to try something this week on the BAM channel. I talked about it with Mike. I'm going to start doing some stuff on Friday nights. It'll be like a live stream on Zoom. Just going to play a movie in the background, open up the chat. If you guys want to join in, it's cool. If you don't want to show your face, it's fine. But I'll be playing some music and a movie, actually. I'm going to do a movie. I'll post it soon. I have the movie in mind. It's going to be a fun one. Nothing too serious or too dumb. But do check out the page. And I'll see you soon.